This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Osmond on the star in American Pie, of course, is now cross-play. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was that?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big butts play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. It just happened. What can you do?
Let's talk to things.
I didn't like the shock wall.
Is that the shock master's wall?
Yeah, I like big dicks myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
our
opener.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
It's so hard with the squad. We like guards. Got this at the bar, the bar, the bar. Strip bars in Miami. Almost came home with the Grammy. Next year, bring you home three for the family. Watch me. You can catch a dive on Hitachi. Popping shit like a Nazi. Iced out like DiBiase. Fuck that, Liberace. 4X Versace. Somebody stop me. Never that.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Tuesday evening, and Scott Criscola. How are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 354 of the Place to Be Podcast, and at least here in the Northeast, it took, well, I guess winter officially started December 21st, but it didn't take long for the old man to shake his head, and down came the snow. So we had a couple inches here in Connecticut. I'm sure you got hit with a little bit too, JR, in your neck of the woods.
No, not too bad.
You're heavily medicated this evening, aren't you?
I would say about an inch, I would say, here. So.
Yeah, no, it's about an inch and a half here to it. But, yeah, it's pretty damn cold. And but we are in the warm steel box. And I would say, how was your weekend? But since I was with you, it was pretty awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a good time. Went to the good old Bruins game. Tough loss.
Yes, very tough.
I went to Boneheads with the Sports Lounge crew and Mr. McGinn.
Yes. We watched the Cardinals look fairly inept.
Yes. And, hung out here. And by the way, speaking of sports podcasts, Dr. G... You know, Giants fans have quickly become the biggest assholes I know, and they luck their way blindly with eyes closed to two Super Bowls on two of the luckiest catches you'll ever see, and all of a sudden, they're the savants of football.
I was loving it the other night.
I can't wait till he gets his ass whipped in the potential Sports Lounge versus Extra Point debate, and then we'll see what Giants fans know about football.
Oh, God. I was just sitting back and letting the magic happen.
Absurd. Arrogance, those Giants fans. They're becoming the Patriots fans that they always mocked. They're becoming the Pats fans that they always mocked.
I tell you something. When they're in the playoffs every year, you know, they're cordial, they're nice. Skip it a couple years, and suddenly they're all a little rankled, and they're a little they're a little testy. Oh, I'm sorry.
You can't ever criticize the great Giants. Yeah. Who are, you know, yeah, they win their Super Bowls and they're like the fucking Marlins. They go back in the shitter for 5 years afterwards.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear
and
it.
I just, every Giant fan had to cry and piss and moan about the fucking penalty on Sunday. You know what? You know what I say to all Giant fans? And to my good friend Jordan Duncan, who I love. You know what I say? I don't fucking care. I'm playing Sunday, so I don't give a shit. Piss and moan all you want. Refs blew the call.
And you know what, too? Comparing your quarterback to Joe Flacco isn't a positive, Dr. G. Comparing Eli Manning to Joe Flacco like it's some kind of fucking award is not a good thing. And Andy Dalton does suck. How about that? Sucks like shit.
He wants you to buy an Andy Dalton jersey. So
it's trash. The only thing that sucks is that they get to blame him not having A.J. Green and Gresham as some kind of reason for him not to suck. So he would have had 110 yards instead of 80 or whatever the hell he had.
Well, if you haven't had a chance, take a listen to this week's edition of Extra Point. So, no, definitely do.
No.
Don't say don't. What's the matter with you? No, definitely
That's
do.
That's his punishment.
Well, why am I getting punished? I didn't fucking say anything.
You enable him.
Oh, and you and I enable you. So there you go.
All right.
But anyway, it's a good show. And and then we watched the Steelers fold up like a cheap suit, which, of course, Cowboy Sr. quite thrilled about that.
Oh, boy.
But the Ravens will not win next Saturday. They may break balls for a couple quarters, but they're not going to beat the Patriots. Joe Flacco has to win. So.
I feel like we should be doing a podcast. Every year they're playing, we do a podcast, and then I get to
celebrate. I know. But the disturbing news I found out today, JR, was about my man Johnny Bones going into treatment for, not for cocaine, but like an ingredient of cocaine. Some strange, like an ingredient of cocaine or something really odd, but he's going into rehab. Did he fight high on Saturday?
I guess he had failed before, they're saying. But I guess whatever he failed for wasn't like a banned substance for fighting. So they let him fight and then they announced it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like he actually failed it earlier in December.
Right. Hmm. So, no. So he'll be out for, well, I mean, he won, but he wasn't expected probably to fight till April anyway. So we'll see how long he's in the clink, the rehab clink. But otherwise, it was a very nice weekend. It was always good to visit JR. Not sure when we'll see each other in a
couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not like it is today. I really rather not be 18 degrees.
Well, I don't mind the cold. It's the snow.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that could really throw us off. But
yeah. And wind. But
we'll find somewhere to keep warm.
Yeah. But if you're, we'll find a little dark alcove. And as we mentioned, if you have, if you're going to the Rumble, we have a chat set up, right? Or a page on
Facebook group
on Facebook. Yep.
A nice contingent of us heading down there. So if you want to be part of the weekend festivities, they'll begin Saturday afternoon. They go through Ring of Honor and then all through Sunday and into the Rumble. So if you want to be part of that, hit us up and let us know.
Yes, exactly. So, all right. Well, let's see what fun and games we have here. I open the door.
Hey, what is going on here?
What's going on here is we close the door on one of the most enigmatic and mysterious to explain years in the history of World Wrestling Entertainment, that being the year 2003. Because, no, this isn't a break. On this night, we draw a line in the sand. Do you feel like turning the network on? It's when we finally know that we can find all the opens now without, you know, some
anyone can go watch them now. So.
Sexy Chicken 627 and that funny little intro with lights and bells and whistles and everything. With Jeff Hardy's face or some shit. Anyway, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you Armageddon.
Armageddon, excited to talk about the show because it was an interesting one, Scott. A lot of
it was.
Ups and downs, a lot of big moments. Kind of a single brand December show you probably would think would be kind of blandish, nothing really going down, but it ends up being a pretty important show in the long run. So we'll dive into that.
And much more entertaining than I remember it being. I actually enjoyed the show quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm curious. We'll stack it up against the other Raw shows at the end.
Yeah. All right. Anything before we open? We usually do everything afterwards. So, okay. December 14th, 2003. Live from the TD Waterhouse Center in Orlando, Florida. Is this a new building? Or is this the old arena?
Let's see.
Did we have this discussion last time? I don't think so.
Have we been here since Rumble 90?
I don't think so.
Yeah, this is the same arena. Opened January 29th, 89. Closed September 30th, 2010.
All right, and then there's a new Amway. All right, so we don't have to go over the building. Okay. Your attendance, 9,000. Your buy rate, 0.45. And your announcers out in the boons, good old JR Jim Ross and Jerry the King Waller. All right, time for our final Sutton report of 2000.
Ever. Oh, okay.
Well, don't say that. Jesus. God, I don't know what's going to happen after that.
Armageddon was actually never shown in the UK. The agreement between the WWE and Sky over showing four events on Sky Box Office expired. Despite some discussion between the both parties, an agreement wasn't made in time to get Armageddon shown. Talk was around the dirt sheets that could have possibly not been shown. Not many of the events in 04 afterwards. So, there you go. Sponsored by, do you remember?
Enix? Wasn't it a Final Fantasy show, game? I don't remember which one, but...
Square Enix's Final Fantasy X2.
X2.
12, okay. Is that what it is?
Okay. Yes, 12.
Our current Raw champions, world champion still Bill Goldberg, Intercontinental champion still Rob Van Dam, mm-hmm. tag team champion still the Dudley Boys, and the women's champion still Molly Holly.
Mm-hmm.
Final title stats for the year, 49 times a title changed hands, 122 times a title was retained,
mm-hmm.
one time a title changed on a house show, and twice it changed due to injury.
Hmm. Interesting.
Matt Hardy back on Raw. Sergeant yes. Slaughter returned to the company for an edition of Raw as well. Mm-hmm. Nathan Jones quit the company. We talked about that.
Yep.
Headed back to Australia. We had a death on December 6th. WCW star The Wall. In his hotel
oh, yeah,
room,
that's right.
Found by All Japan Pro Wrestling Management. Fellow wrestlers of LA Park and Nosawa. Was taken to a local hospital, pronounced dead on arrival. Ruled as a heart attack, possibly due to a history of drugs. He was just 36.
That's a shame.
Raw passed 550 episodes. TNA passed 74 weekly pay-per-views. Let's see. We had a special episode of WWE Wrestling on 12/4 at the Spike TV Video Game Awards. Rey Mysterio and Trish Stratus defeated Chris Jericho and Victoria. Jenna Jameson was a guest ring announcer.
Mm-hmm.
Internet. I think J.O. has a DVD somewhere.
Yes,
International Heat. Matt Hardy defeated Maven, Stevie Richards defeated Sean Daivari, John Heidenreich defeated an unknown, and Rico defeated Tommy Dreamer. Armageddon Heat, Rico defeated John Heidenreich. Got some debuts here as well. 31 wrestlers have been hired over the course of 2003 by the company.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Not a surprise. We know we had talked about all year that 2003 was kind of a transition year in terms of the roster. Kind of like 2002 was, but even more so in 2003 because of the split really being in full force. The rosters, both rosters were getting, toyed around with. Okay, let's dive right in. Okay. And this opener is an immediate surprise. It is a surprise as we get to the battle of Thuggin and Buggin versus someone they were trying to recruit, I believe, into Thuggin and Buggin. Give us the background.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga!
And we're surprised why he wasn't. JR, give us the background.
Booker defeated Mark Henry on the 11/17 Raw. The next week, Henry got revenge, defeating Booker in a street fight. On 12/1, Henry assaulted Booker after a match with Test and laid him out. Henry would get some licks back in the next week, heading into the rubber match here. So yeah, Thuggin and Buggin, we've talked a little bit about them, right? Because we had Rodney Mack earlier in the year.
Right.
We had Jazz earlier in the year. Chris Nowinski was part of this group, and now Mark Henry kind of back. We saw him in Survivor Series back from injury. So solid feud, I thought, for Henry to get back in the flow and the roster. Both men could really use a win here, as Booker had been floundering after a strong early part of the year. Henry immediately uses his power to manhandle Booker, and the crowd is really into Booker as well. Booker goes after the knee, and that leads to a nice dive over the top to the floor. Henry survives a missile dropkick, and then goes to work on the back and slows things down using a bow and arrow kind of move and then a bear hug. Booker kicks his way back into the match. Henry keeps using his power to sway control, hitting a really sloppy powerbomb where it just drops Booker. Booker hits a scissor kick for the clean win to wrap things up. That was a tough loss for Henry, but Booker really needed a win like this. I think a loss here would have been bad for him. Especially, I think Henry had pinned him at Survivor Series, right? And that was kind of setting this up. Was okay in spots. Nothing special. I thought Booker looked pretty tough battling through Henry's power offense. So, what did you think of this one?
I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed it very much. I like the pacing, believe it or not.
You think it slowed down too much with when Henry took over?
No, because I think that's his moveset.
Okay,
I think that's the way it's got to be. Sometimes you just got to accept it. Other times,
I'm gonna accept nothing.
I ain't accept
Come
nothing.
Come at me with that.
It's just how guys work. It's just the way it is. But Booker had some good comebacks. It wasn't. I looked at the total. I looked at the runtime. Was what 10:20. Which was a decent length amount. Not exactly the kind of opener you would have. A lot of, you expect a more athletic, faster paced opener. And, I was a little surprised that this opened the show.
Were you fine with the decision?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I'm guessing this ends the feud, and Booker probably moves on to other things to begin 2004. But I thought the opener was fine. I wasn't upset by it. It's a decent pace. For a power guy and kind of a hybrid guy.
Yeah, I think it was good for Booker. He's really been in a funk since he had that back injury, lost the IC title. kind of just been really aimless after such a hot, you know, last year at this time, he was way, way hot.
Right. Yeah, no, it seemed like he kind of, I don't know, cooled a bit or, you know, kind of chilled off a little bit middle of the year and after the, you know, the whole Triple H debacle and that stuff. But I feel like he might be a guy that's due for a show change, you know, and I think it's for the better. I feel like the roster on Raw has been kind of herky jerky, and I think Booker T was due for a show change. I haven't said that much in our Raw pay-per-view recap.
Well, we didn't have any kind of main switch. We've had guys jump throughout 03, but we didn't have like any kind of draft or anything like that. So I know there's one coming soon, and it's, I think it's much needed because I think the rosters have pretty much maxed out what they can do with a lot of these guys. Like, what more can Booker do? Lose to Triple H again? I mean, there's really not much else for him on Raw at this point. So I think you're right. I think he definitely needs a change. Needs a new look. A change will do you good, as someone once said.
Yes.
And she may or may not be involved in the 90s tournament on PlayStation.com.
I wonder. She probably has 11 songs. No, I don't know how many songs she had. Anyway.
Is that one in the 90s?
What, Change Will Do You Good? Yeah. Most of her. Oh, I'm thinking of the 2000s. I was looking back. Change Will Do You Good. No, no, no. That might be hovering in that.
I don't remember it being
2001?
In 2001.
Hmm.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah, you look it up, and I'll bring in our next match. All right. We actually, before our next match, out comes, we have to talk about this because we didn't discuss this at Survivor Series, obviously.
No, it was 97, but... that song.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it must be in the tournament somewhere.
If it makes you happy.
That's definitely on the countdown because that was before that. Or maybe that's the same album. Now I'm not sure. Okay. So out comes the new co-general manager of Raw with Eric Bischoff.
What?
Yeah, new co-GM.
That's right. JR, Steve Austin's gone.
JTR, because we saw what happened at Survivor Series. Steve Austin.
Loser.
Out. He's a loser. Tell us what happened. How did Eric Bischoff get yet another co-GM?
Well, we don't have enough GMs. Never can have enough. On December 1st, Raw began with an appearance by Mick Foley. He announced he'd be replacing Steve Austin as co-GM and starting a petition to bring Stone Cold back to Raw. Foley spent the night randomly firing various stars between revealing that nobody was actually fired. He's just trying to show Bischoff a lesson about abuse of power. The next week saw a surprising reunion as The Rock made an unannounced return to save Foley from an attack by La Resistance.
La Resistance.
Mick Foley comes out here. It seems a little bit silly that we needed another co-GM, but it was always good to see Foley back. Of course, he had that quick run in June after having been gone since late 01. Mm-hmm. Petitioning for Austin to come back. Stacy comes out. They dance, waste a little bit of time. And then Randy Orton comes out to shit on the petition. And, of course, he was the guy that led to Austin getting fired. So he's bragging about that. He pisses all over Foley. And that leads to our next match where Mick Foley names himself the referee.
Hmm.
On the spot.
Yes, he does. As he strips off his baggy suit sweatpant combo. And that next match is our first title match of the evening. The WWE Intercontinental Championship. Your champion, as Mr. Sutton mentioned in his report, RVD, Rob Van Dam, taking on Randy Orton. And this begins what could be a very lucrative evening for Evolution. And because two of the four members of Evolution already booked in title matches.
Not booked.
The other two one wasn't. The other was in a match that didn't involve a title, but we'll talk about that later.
We got to commission Dennis to just do poems about various things. That
yes. That'd be tremendous. Like Leaping Lanny Poffo. Imagine our own Dennis Stamp Frisbees.
Mm.
Very impressive.
I just want one poem about the show.
Mm, that'd be very cool. Kevin Kelly kind of did a poem, really, for the Christmas.
Yeah, true.
If you put his narration together, that's pretty much a poem. All right. Randy Orton. Taking on RVD for the Intercontinental Championship. This was inevitable. I mean, Randy Orton obviously was a guy on the rise and a guy that was due for some gold. How did we get here?
On 11-17, RVD was defending his IC title against Ric Flair when Randy Orton interfered and dropped RVD with an RKO. Earlier that night, Eric Bischoff had announced that all the members of Team Bischoff were allowed one favor request after what they had done in Survivor Series. Orton cashed in his for an IC title match at the pay-per-view. The following week saw the return of Raw Roulette. Orton spun a Legend Killer match, and his opponent was Sergeant Slaughter. Orton beat him quickly, but RVD came out and ran him off. On 12-1, RVD pinned Orton in a six-man tag when GM Foley counted the pin. The next week, Batista defeated RVD in a non-title match. And after the match, Foley announced that he would be the referee for the pay-per-view match. And yes, it was in advance, not on the spot. But they kind of made it like it was on the spot.
Mm.
But I guess the match wasn't supposed to be then. That's what kind of what is on the spot.
No, it wasn't supposed to be at that moment. No.
So Foley's the ref here. Crowd still loves RVD. Good to see him with some gold. Orton ready for the next step in his ascension. Stalemate for both early as the crowd roots on RVD. The King notes that Foley could offset Flair. RVD hits a nice stiff spin kick, knocks Orton to the floor. RVD makes a mistake by going to the top blindly, and Orton shoves him to the floor. Flair tries to get involved, but Foley keeps stopping him and yelling at him. Orton works over RVD with some pretty basic offense, but he's a pretty great swagger, I thought, already while he's doing it. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. No, definitely. Definitely. I feel like, well, finish your comments and all, but I agree, but yes.
Orton wears down with a chin lock sprinkled in with some near falls. RVD makes an energetic comeback with the usual array of kicks, a nice Northern Light suplex for two. JR and King out there were actually pretty solid here, calling the action, adding in some psychology as well. Orton gets a hanging DDT, but RVD fucks up with a the rope break, and that leads to an awkward two count by Foley. I don't know if you noticed that. He doesn't really get his foot on the rope, but kind of does, and Foley has to stop the count.
Yep.
Foley cuts off Flair again. Orton uses that opening to dropkick RVD off the top. Orton follows an RKO for the win. I thought it was a very good match. A huge step forward for Orton's development. He won the match clean. Orton officially launched as a future star. You could feel and hear it in the commentary, too, that they're really pushing this as a huge moment for him. And I thought it was good on RVD. Worked hard to help put Orton over here. And it really felt like kind of a crowning moment for Orton, a real breakthrough.
Yes, I used to not like this match very much, but definitely changed in my eyes today. I thought Randy Orton definitely worked well with RVD. They had a good pacing. 18 minutes to me was a good length, and Orton really graduated for me from kind of like, you know, eyes closed, feeling his way around, to really becoming a good commanding heel that can dictate a tempo in a match, particularly with a guy like RVD, who's very experienced in that, of course. I wanted to ask you this. I was thinking about this today. Ever since No Mercy 01, you and I have a little byplay about, is RVD done? Is his cooked? Is putting over another guy now pretty much officially saying that RVD is done?
I think that's a ceiling. Yeah. I mean, this is what he's going to be used for now, use him to, you know, win titles in the mid card and then use that to transition. He's a transitional face.
Yep.
Move the seat onto other guys. I mean, that's it. They blew anything where he could have been anything bigger. That's gone.
Yeah. No, it's definitely been gone. But it was a great match.
What did you think of Orton at the time, though? Did you feel something coming even at the time? I mean, here, watching it here, you could see it. I mean, it's clear that they were setting him up. But even at the time, do you remember him being kind of, this point, ready to be the next thing?
Yep, I did. He wasn't put in Evolution by accident, and that goes for the other guy who we'll talk about in a couple matches. He was definitely a star on the rise. And this was a good pay-per-view for that to happen. It's one thing I have to say about these secondary brand specific shows is that you're able to kind of, you know, there's not a lot of pressure on you. You know, it's fans at the time flock to one show or the other. So maybe not everybody, you know, bought the, I mean, 0.45 is not that great, but again, there was a big storm in the Northeast, 'cause I didn't watch the show. So I wonder if people's cable or satellite had issues in this part of the country back then, but 0.45 is not very good. But it was a chance for him to win the title and take that next step on kind of a very pressureless stage. It wasn't like the Rumble. It wasn't like Mania, where the world was watching. You know, so I definitely think that he was set for big things, and this was a good chance for him to take that next step and grab that first brass ring. And I thought RVD was a pro. Put him over, and it ended up being a much better match than I remember. And I have that to say about most of this show, surprisingly. I've only seen this show, I don't know, today might have been the third time I think I've ever seen it. So I don't know about you, but this is one of those ones, because I didn't see it live, so I think I saw it when we first wrote it, and I think I might have seen it twice since. And this match definitely was better than I first remember it being. So kudos to Orton. I know I kind of, you know, slammed him a little bit in the middle of the year, but I feel like he really stepped up and focused and worked with RVD and put on a fantastic match. So he definitely deserved to win the title tonight.
Kind of a shitty year for RVD. I mean, what's he really done? He had the stuff with Kane pretty much like on most of the year. Didn't do anything early on. Missed Mania. His biggest thing was probably being in that Survivor match, I guess, on Austin's team.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he didn't do much anything else.
Yeah,
he wasn't even on. He was just in at Mania. So, yeah, not good.
Disappointments.
Yep. All right. So, Randy Orton, your new WWE Intercontinental Champion. Belt one for Evolution. Next up, we have a Battle of the Sexes match.
Hmm.
How did we get here, JR?
Sounds hot. On November 17th, Chris Jericho had Lita as a guest on the highlight reel. During the segment, he brought on Matt Hardy, who had recently been traded to Raw. He and Lita acknowledged their love, but before we could hear any more, Molly came out to make a match. It would be her and Eric Bischoff against Matt and Lita. If Lita and Matt won, Lita would get a title match, but if they lost, Lita had to leave Raw. Later that night, Matt turned his back on Lita and allowed her to be pinned and kicked off Raw. Matt said Lita was selfish for not joining him on SmackDown and that he was done with her. After the bout, Lita was leaving when Christian stopped her and told her that he used his Team Bischoff favor to get her job back. A few minutes later, Jericho continued his recent flirtation with Trish Stratus and was able to convince her he knew nothing of Matt's plan and he was even able to earn a kiss. The next week, Lita faced Victoria in a cage match when Matt came down and slammed the door in Lita's face, costing her the match. Christian came down to help her as he seemingly continued to try to win her love. The Jericho-Trish flirtation also continued that night, as well as Jericho continued to put the full court press on with an interested Stratus. The 12-1 Raw, Trish and Jericho teamed up to defeat Rico and Jackie Gata. Later that night, it was revealed that Jericho and Christian had a bet to see who could nail the respective lady first, and the stakes were $1 Canadian. As they were discussing their bet, Trish overheard everything because she was heading to Jericho's locker room to give him a hockey jersey as a gift. The next week opened with all four of them in the ring as Jericho and Christian tried to apologize with flowers and candy, claiming their conversation was a joke. The ladies didn't believe it, instead tossed the gifts back in the guys' faces, and Bischoff announced they would face off in a Battle of the Sexes match at the pay-per-view. And according to rumors at this time, Trish and Jericho were actually writing this whole thing.
Hmm. Interesting. Surprised by that. In a good way. That they were trusted. Hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So, this match, Scott, interesting one.
It is. It is. It's not great.
Well, I mean,
as good as it can
obviously.
Be, I suppose. Yeah.
Good mix of though, I think, of these guys and girls. A good use of them. Instead of having the same old just diva match or women's match with Trish and Lita, I thought it was good to see them mixed into something a little bit more important. And I thought fans really getting into the relationship aspect too. It was a big push for Christian to be involved in. There was good chemistry between all four of them. I remember a lot of people being really into the Jericho Trish stuff. Bischoff also was in the mix throughout the feud, as we mentioned. A bit uncomfortable with the man-on-woman violence, so I did think that watching this. Nice pop for the ladies. Jericho tries to sweet-talk Trish, but she isn't buying it. Jericho refuses to fight and just takes all the offense while trying to stop Trish and calm her down. Christian's a bigger asshole with creepy smiles and wanting to fight. Lita flies around and keeps Christian off balance until Jericho smacks her from behind. Jericho gets his first real offense in on Lita, hitting her with a back elbow after Lita gets a near fall and a roll-up. Christian keeps stooging around, flopping as Trish ducks and dodges. Trish eats a stiff Christian clothesline, and Jericho spikes Lita into the guardrail. Christian rolls up Trish, but Jericho doesn't look happy at all when Christian celebrates the win. Pretty fun match. I thought overall it was fun. I know you're not saying it's not good, but overall I thought the full package was fun. Christian
you're right.
And Jericho basically were just wrestling themselves with all the theatrics. Some of it can be tough to swallow, like I mentioned, but they did well with what they had to work with, and in the end, made sense. There's no way the ladies should win, so obviously Jericho and Christian had to win. And a pretty good storyline continues here. Did you like it as a usage of these guys and girls?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm half kidding. I mean, you can't really grade this like anything else, but no, it was fun. And considering two people who really don't know what, they don't know how to book anything, I thought it's been written very well. I will say this. I think that... Excuse me, I sneezed. They could have stretched this out a little longer. I feel like the bet should have been like they should have made the bet, then had it go on for a little bit, and then after a few weeks have Trish overhear it.
Well, they did. I mean, the bet was going on for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah. No. Well,
and then they talk about it there.
Oh, okay. I knew that was the case, and then when they were doing the package, it seemed like they just came up with it that night. So I don't know, maybe the package confused me, but otherwise I was fine with it. It was a good use of all of them. We get later on to the women's match. At least Trish doesn't have to be in the title picture all the time. You know, it was nice to have her in something else,
right?
So that Molly Holly, who is your current women's champion, we'll talk about her in a little bit, were able to face other competitors, and then you don't have Trish in every main event. And she's, you know, every women's title match, and she's not burned out. So that was a good.
I agree. It was good to mix up the division, get these two out of it, and get them to something else. I thought they deserved it, especially heading into Mania season. I thought they deserved something a little bit better.
Mm.
And no, I liked it. And what did you think of the man on woman stuff? Did you have a hard time watching that here?
No, it's a match. It's not like a, and you can, because if it was like a segment and it was a beatdown or something, that's one thing. But you don't, when it's a match, you can, you know that it's a little more scripted and you can kind of dance around it a little bit. But if it was a segment where they like attack them, that's different.
I mean, even with the, even being the match show, even with some of the move, like that Christian clothesline was really stiff.
If you were facing women who were not really trained, like if this was Stacy Keibler or
Linda,
another roster. Linda took a tombstone, but Lita and Trish are competitors. They've gotten hit just as hard.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like Brock Lesnar clotheslined him. I mean, Christian's not.
I know this is a weird. Weird sliding scale you're on, but here. If Brock does it, it's bad. If Christian does it, it's good. I don't know. No.
That's not my point. No. I'm not talking about good or bad. Brock, who's a big, very large guy.
I think either way, it's still a muscled up guy smacking with a clothesline. It doesn't matter to me how big he is.
Well, I still think that you're.
It's like Christian's also a midget. Yeah.
You're also. He's a vanilla midget. No. When you're dealing with two competitive women's wrestlers who can take bumps, I don't think it's as big a deal. Mm. If this was like, again, you know, Stacy Keibler or even Tori Wilson or somebody who's not really trained to be a women's wrestler and take a bump like that. Yeah, I
think it's
a
slippery slope either way. I mean, I like the storyline. I get why they did it. And it was a different time, whatever. You know, 10 years ago was very different than it is now with that kind of stuff. But it just felt a little awkward to me watching it, especially that clothesline from Christian and some of the other stuff in the mix here. I don't know what else they could have done. Maybe had Trish and Lita get someone to wrestle for them. I don't know. I mean, I guess they had to do it if they wanted to do the story, but it just felt a little awkward. That's all.
I understand your opinion. All I'm saying is I think in this situation, when you're dealing with two really good women's competitors,
I wish they would have done without like that clothesline or a big bump. Like, I wish they just had them kind of stooge around and then like Christian just rolls her up, you know, and whatever, holds the tights down.
Sure.
I just don't think we needed like a.
I remember,
like,
he does it to Lita or Trish?
He clotheslines Trish, but Lita catches the big back elbow from Jericho in the face, and then gets thrown into the barricade. So, I mean, I wish they did more where Lita and Trish cost themselves more than took any moves. That's all.
I will say this. At least they didn't. I mean, Trish was relatively healthy. Lita's coming back from a major neck injury, so at least she didn't take the really nasty clothesline, but.
Well, she just took that back elbow to the face.
Yeah, the back elbow was pretty bad, but not nearly as bad as the clothesline was pretty vicious. So in any event, I understand what you're saying. I don't want to say qualify it, but I'm not as crazy about it being that violent because Trish and Lita are trained competitors. They're a little more durable than, again, I keep using Stacy Keibler and Tori Wilson as an example because they wrestle, but they're not Lita or Trish. I think they can take the bumps better than someone who's not trained. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I just think it's awkward to watch a man to sanction a match with two men.
Oh, in any instance, it is. Of course, it is. And if this was a segment, then I would be 100% in your corner.
I think it's the same though. I don't see the difference. I mean.
Because a match is booked to be in a bubble, a competitive, highly competitive matchup. A segment needs to come off a little more violent because it's unexpected in a lot of cases. You know, a Pearl Harbor job, something like that.
I don't know. That seems like an odd rationalization, but we'll leave it there.
Okay, that's fine. But either way, Chris Jericho and Christian get the expected win over Trish and Lita. So next up, we continue the Shawn Michaels Evolution Tour which he seems to have done dating back to, I guess I could say SummerSlam 02, but we'll even say Armageddon 02, 1 year earlier, as he takes on the final guy that he hasn't faced yet. He faced, if you want to start 1 year earlier, he took on Triple H at Armageddon 02. Mm-hmm. He took on Ric Flair at Bad Blood. He took on Randy Orton at Unforgiven. And now he takes on the final guy in Evolution, and that is Batista. Any little backstory on here?
Yeah, a little bit of backstory. Just a tiny bit. On the 11/24 Raw, Shawn Michaels is assaulted by Evolution thanks to Chris Jericho, his Raw roulette partner, walking out on him. It was later announced that Michaels would take on Batista at the pay-per-view as he was continued to look for retribution for Batista costing him at Survivor Series. If you remember, he came in and beat them. Him.
Yes, the powerbombed him. Yep. Yes.
Big feud for Batista after his major statement at Survivor Series. Flair, I thought, was a perfect mentor, manager for him and Orton. Michaels runs circles around Batista and then pops for Flair in the mouth as well. Super crowd into Michaels here. Really, really into him.
Yes.
Yep. Batista uses his power, starts to work HBK over with some strong moves, punishing his back. Batista manhandles him. Shawn fights through a comeback with a big... I'm sorry, Batista fights through Shawn's comeback with a big clothesline.
Mm-hmm.
Batista has good, emphatic, strong, and violent offense at times. You can tell he's a little bit hesitant, though. And that's why I thought putting him with Flair was smart to help him gain some confidence in the ring. Because you can tell he has something in there, and some of his moves are really, you know, crisp and hard-hitting. But you can see he kind of, you know, I don't say pussyfoots around the ring, but he doesn't seem to be completely confident with his movements.
I used to not like this match very much. I really, really like this match today.
Do you get that from Batista, though, here?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I'm going to get to that point in a second. I just want to finish this other point. That, I feel that Shawn Michaels faced all these Evolution guys on purpose.
Yeah, I guess.
In terms of booking. I think he was booked to take on all of them and kind of help put them over. I think that was a little Triple H, Shawn Michaels kind of booking handshake. Take on my, you know, Flair is Flair. Everyone's going to want to see that, but take on the other two guys and let me know what you think. We won't get into the whole Unforgiven too long, too short thing with Orton, but I really like this match. And to answer your question, yes. I think, I don't want to say Batista was intimidated, because obviously Batista's not intimidated or anything, but I think he was probably like, oh man, I'm facing Shawn Michaels, big match, Triple H is watching, Vince is watching, I got to make sure I don't fucking bludgeon this guy and break his jaw or something. So I think the easy stuff, the power bombs are easy to execute, and Shawn. But I think probably some moves, I think he was like, all right, I got to be careful. I'm not going to, you know, crack this guy's head open or whatever. So yeah, I definitely think he was feigning.
But I think just in general, I don't think it's even just here. By the way, this commercial right now for this American Family Insurance on your channel, CBS College Sports.
Yes.
Call me off guard for a minute because it's filmed in the same room as DDP Yoga is done. same backdrop and everything.
Isn't that funny? When I encoded that, when I adjusted that spot into our servers, I'm like, wait a minute. I know that. That's where I do my, what's the good one? The diamond cutter, double diamond cutter, whatever that worked out. I was like, wait a minute. That's those windows. That's pretty funny.
Made me laugh for a second. But yeah, I think it was even more than just here, it being a stage with Shawn. I think just overall, he was just still kind of hesitant in the ring, and that's why I thought putting Flair with him was good. So Michaels fights through the back injury to come back, hits the top rope elbow. The crowd's just going bananas here. Michaels slips out of the Batista bomb and hits switch in music for the win. I thought it was a very good, long, hard-hitting, well-structured match. I was fine with Shawn winning here because the story was Batista being too inexperienced to be able to finish Shawn off. He dominated for a lot of the match but didn't know how to put him away. Michaels used his wiles to outlast and then steal a last-second win. He didn't really dominate at the end or anything. He kind of snuck the win out. I thought it was a good showing for the Raw Batista, and I thought Flair was good too. I really like this match. I thought it really served its purpose.
It definitely served its purpose. I think Batista definitely has something. But yeah, I think he needs a little more seasoning. Shawn is a great guy to work with, and I think that was kind of the backdoor booking with Triple H. Like, look, you know, give these guys a whirl on pay-per-view. Let me know what you think. Are they worth it? And I think they both definitely are. On another tangent, JR, as I was switching channels because our Friars are in commercial, do you think more people go to St. John's games at the Garden than they do Knicks games?
No,
seems like this crowd
Knicks
at the Garden
well.
Is pretty... I know, it's amazing since they're 5-32, but they got a back shot of the Garden. There's a lot of people there. I feel like probably more they go to St. John's games go to Knicks games. But anyway, St. John's has a one-point lead right now. I definitely think that Batista has something. I don't think he's on the radar yet like Orton is, but you can tell that there's something there. But a guy like Batista, who doesn't really have... I mean, obviously Orton and Batista, and we'll talk about them almost hand-in-hand over the next few years of pay-per-views. Orton obviously has the pedigree.
Right.
No pun intended.
Ah.
He's got the bloodline and everything. Batista's kind of starting from scratch. He was a bodybuilder. He was a weightlifter.
And older, too. Older guy.
Yes. Yep.
So you didn't really know how much of a future he had, a guy that, he's starting, but he's already in his late 30s. Can they really hitch a wagon to him at all?
Right, exactly. But he, I think he definitely surprised people with this one. And I like the beating he gives Maven after the game, after the match, because he's so pissed off that he lost.
Well, we'll talk about that here, yeah.
Yeah, I know you're going to finish that point. But yeah, it was an exceptional match. And this pay-per-view is not as...
there's a lot going on, and it's an important show. No, it's an important show, and it's been big for two guys, specifically Orton and Batista, and it'll continue to be big as we move along. So, like you said, Maven comes out because he has a match next with Matt Hardy, but Batista and Ric Flair are still stomping around the ring all pissed off. So Hardy comes out for his match, and he and Maven start fighting on the floor. As we mentioned before, Hardy had jumped to Raw. Maven gets tossed in the ring and destroyed by Batista. Referee calls off the match as a result, and Hardy pins him anyway. I thought this was pretty good character stuff for Hardy and for everyone all around, too. Batista, Flair. Better than any kind of match could have accomplished for Maven and Hardy, I thought. Tight segment, too. They didn't meander around or waste any time. They did a quick beat down. Batista celebrated, beat the shit out of him and left. And then Flair gives Batista pep talk backstage.
Yes.
And that was another big part of his development. So this show's really been all about the development of Orton and Batista so far.
Well, it definitely needs to be. It's been obviously Evolution's all about. It's been all about Triple H and the world title, and definitely with Batista on the shelf for a lot of 2003, he needed kind of a little. He's a little bit behind the curve right now, so he definitely needed to kind of catch up to the other, to the rest of the guys in the group. But so Shawn Michaels wins the match. Batista gets a little breaks a piece off of me at the end there,
and it's not even like he was getting his heat back from losing, because I don't think he lost much heat with that loss. I thought it was a good he knows he could have won and he was frustrated. I thought that was a good story they told. And Michaels is fine winning that.
Yeah, I mean you're not losing it. I mean it's Shawn Michaels. You're not losing. Right. It's not like you're losing a some stiff. I mean you're losing one of the greatest ever. So take it for what it is. So all right. Next up, we have our next title match of the evening, and it is for the World Tag Team Championships, a.k.a. the Red Belts. Your champions are the Dudleys, and it is because Eric Bischoff does not like the Dudleys. He tried to manipulate them earlier in the year. He throws every team in the company at them in a turmoil match. Little backstory, JR.
A little bit of backstory. After his partner Jamal was fired from the WWF in June, Rosie formed a brief alliance with Teddy Long and Roddy Mack. He quickly severed ties with him and befriended the Hurricane, who began to see some potential in Rosie. Rosie bought into the hype and became Hurricane's partner and a superhero in training, or SHIT for short. In between matches, they were featured in various training sketches between the two. Lance Cade. He started his career training under Shawn Michaels in 1999. After graduating, he spent a brief time in Japan before WWE signed him up to a developmental deal. He worked on his craft in HWA and OVW before being called up to Raw in June of 2003. Upon his debut, his name was Jane Garrison. Defeated Lance Storm in his first match on 6/16. When Cade next appeared on 7/28, he had a new tag team partner with him, former WCW tag champion Mark Jindrak. Jindrak had been in developmental since the 2001 WCW buyout and had been perpetually rumored to be joining Evolution over the summer before they finally settled in on him being a partner to Cade. The two spent the rest of 2003 mixing it up with the rest of the tag division. On the 6/16 Raw, Lance Storm was wrestling Garrison Cade when GM Steve Austin came out on the ramp and pretended to be falling asleep due to the boredom of Storm's matches. After that, Storm joined Chris Jericho's quest to have Austin removed as GM. Over the fall, Storm quickly started to turn face and eventually joined forces with Val Venus, who tried his best to help Storm loosen up a little bit. It also revealed that Storm was, really endowed.
So, one guy who...
Remember, the boring thing was a very divisive at the time. People were really pissed that they were burying him like that.
Yeah, I know.
Calling him boring on TV. Not a good way to put a guy over.
So stupid. So, a guy whose name rhymes with penis tells someone else that he has a very... Never mind.
And he should use it. Able. And speaking of the man that rhymes with penis, this is his final pay-per-view appearance.
Sad.
He would stick around for the next 6 years, but never makes a pay-per-view again aside from dark and heat matches. He had former tag team called V-Squared with Viscera, who actually had a decent run, squashing several tag teams on heat. Had a couple of shots at the tag champs, but to no avail. Venus would suffer a kayfabe injury to care for a more legitimate shoulder injury, and would sideline him for a few months. In February 2007, Venus was given a segment on WWE.com called Sex University, but was only live until April. When the entire segment and the archives were removed, Venus would stick around until his release in January 09, wrestled in Japan for Hulk Hogan's Hulkamania tour in Australia, and resurfaced in TNA in January 2010, but left the company 2 months later. Morley was rehired in October 2010 as a trainer. His all-time pay-per-view record was 13-13. 0-4 at the Rumble, 0-2 at WrestleMania, 1-1 at King of the Ring, 0-2 at SummerSlam, 1-0 at Survivor Series, and 11-4 at other monthly events.
Wow, so he was with the company for 13 years. Doesn't seem like that much, does it?
No, a long time he was around.
No, weird.
La Rez opens things up here, of course. They've kind of been lost in the shuffle a little bit since they lost the titles. Bouncing around, and they take on Hurricane and the Shit. Conway's in for Dupree here. Conway's smooth in the ring. Hurricane gets the pin after Rocket Launcher. Tough showing for La Rez, eliminated first. Jindrak and Kate are in second. They sneak in. They quickly eliminate Hurricane and Rosie. So now they're the remaining team. The Penises are next. All the new teams in the mix on Raw, for better or worse.
The Long Dong Silvers.
I mean, they really overhauled the tag division. I mean, for good or bad.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
It's like a whole new world here.
Yep.
As some may sing. Also good to see Val get a push, but team is a bit weird. Should have come up with a new gimmick probably and been a more unified team name for Val and Storm. I think it could have been really strong in the ring as opposed to this kind of circus show. Yeah. The crowd's shitting on this match.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of surprised by that, actually.
Christian and Jericho come out next. They steal the win by double-team cheating, which works well for them. I'm sorry, Kate and Jindrak.
Yeah, I was going to say, they didn't wrestle twice.
Kate and Jinrock steal the win.
Did you say Jinrock?
Jinrock.
Jindrak, by the
Curtis
way, did
Blow,
have...
Jinrock, all the 89, 88 rappers.
Sugar Hill Gang.
CL Smooth. Raekwon.
And there was a Jindrak vignette taped with Evolution.
Was there?
Yes. A picture of... I don't know if it was a vignette or a picture,
but... That's only if you can smell what the Jindrak is cooking.
Jindrak is cooking.
All right, so they steal the win, which works well for them by cheating when they need to. The Dudleys are still over. They come in hot, and the crowd is immediately fired up. Kate and Jindrak dominate control and slow down the Dudleys. The Dudleys come back with a quick 3D win for the win. Steiner and Test are next. Test is back from his injury, and they are great dickhead heels. Steiner and Test work over Bubba's arm. Dudleys retain, even though Steiner and Test completely dominated the fall. Bischoff comes out and announces one more team, Scott Criscolo, to be added into the mix at the last minute, and everyone's like, huh? What? Who can it be? Since we heard this one, huh?
I know, really. We haven't heard AG. Haven't heard AG in quite a while.
The last time he was on pay per view wrestling, like No Bad Mercy Blood? 02? Oh, Bad Blood. That's right.
Bad Blood against Sean. Yeah. So, Jesus, No Mercy. That's right. Yeah, he wrestled.
Well, that was before that one. I think that was it, right?
Yeah, I think that was it before that. Yeah, No Mercy 02.
They come out. Ric Flair and Batista, one more team. Eric Bischoff announced. That was good booking. Good use of the heel GM here. Until these quickly get wiped out, and we have brand new. Tag team champions. Blah match overall, but I thought it was a great finish to get Batista some more heat. It's a mega push for him, like we mentioned. His team with Ric Flair is really smart, and more punishment for Steve Austin's team from Survivor Series. That's, of course, Bischoff screwing with the Dudley some more. So what did you think of this whole package and Batista and Flair leaving as champs?
Well, before we go there, JR, do you see who just came on the screen? Your boy was just on the screen. God Sham God.
Yes.
Awesome. Love God Sham God. Good guard. Well, of course, I was stoked because I had a feeling of what was going to be happening later on in the evening with Batista and Flair winning the titles here. It didn't faze me. I was totally burnt out on the Dudleys anyway, so I really didn't care. I was pretty happy. I was so fried on them. I think maybe that's one reason why the crowd shit on this match. You think the Dudleys are just gassed at this point? as characters?
No, I think they had a little bit of gas on the tank. Just a little bit.
You think so? I think that's why they were getting booed. Why the crowd was kind of shitting on it, because I think they're fried, but no, I was very happy Flair's first tag title. Well, yeah. Probably ever in WWE, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think back. WCW. When the hell did everyone the tag titles anywhere else? That's a good question.
Yeah, it might be.
And obviously Batista's first ring. So I don't think he ever had. I mean, he wasn't in many title matches. I mean, he had the feud with your boys, the Hollywood Blondes, in 93. He had that one title match on the Clash. But I don't think there were many. I'm sure during the NWO run, he probably had tag shots with Hall and Nash or whatever. But and obviously first title for Batista. First title in WWE with Batista. Of course, he had a reign as the OVW World Champion when he was Leviathan. So, but I had no problem with it. I was happy they won.
No, me too. It was a good choice. Yeah. I mean, the titles would go nowhere with the Dudleys, even if whether you believe that they're kind of done or not. You know, nothing's going to come of that. You've been there, done that. So, might as well give it to someone new. Give it to Batista. The thing with Flair is pretty cool. It's a good use of Flair. Everyone loves seeing him in the ring. I thought this was really smart. I thought it's been a really well booked show the whole night.
Yeah, I'm blown away. Absolutely blown away. Again, I don't think it, and I've never really crapped on this show. It's probably one of the, you know, one of the WWE pay per views that I've watched the least. So every time I watch it, I'm like, wow, I don't totally remember this. And you know, here we go. You know, I'm getting something new every day, every time I watch it. And I didn't think the tag match was that bad. I mean, it was a little over 20, almost 21 minutes, but you know, a lot of teams. So. I was fine with it, but I think that's why the fans crapped on it. I think my personal opinion is I think the Dudleys were at the end of their rope.
I mean, I'm not saying they're hot or they deserve anything more, but I think they have just a little bit left. But we'll see how 04 goes for them.
Mm. Yes, definitely. So there you go.
Stephen Drew. There you go.
Oh, there we go. And I see they're talking about the Dave Gavitt patches on your jerseys. So there you go. Ric Flair and Batista, your new World Tag Team Champions. And now three of the four in Evolution have belts. Do you think that tipped their hand?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that kind of takes away. I don't really care. But okay, why don't we take a break? When we come back, two more title matches. The Women's Championship and then, of course, the World Heavyweight Championship in a triple threat match. First, many words. Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we're back here talking Armageddon 2003 as we bring a close to this year. Hot off the presses, Scott Criscullo, new episode of Titans of Wrestling from May, yes. June 1981. Mm-hmm. The boys are back looking at Dusty Rhodes and Johnny Rods, Don Morocco, Rick McGraw, and a lot more fun matches from that time period.
You're the only one I know that could put that feud over. Let me tell you something, Johnny Rods.
Taking on the unpredictable one. Seinfeld series rewatch. The Bubble Boy went up today, Scott. Legendary episode. I gave it a 10 out of 10. Okay. All-time class. You never seen it?
That's one I don't think I've ever seen.
Oh, you sickened me.
Is that one that I could watch as like a standalone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Awesome. Very much so. Okay. So check that out. New installment of The New Hotness. Russell Sellers has his top comics picks for the week. Mm-hmm. Movies of P2B's Generations up to 2013. Can you believe it?
They started in 1977.
Like in May, yes. So
wow.
Coming to a close soon. The greatest song of the 90s tournament, Scott. We're closing it at the end of round two. It'll be over on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll kick off the official brackets for the pool of 128 down from 640. So should be a lot of fun there.
Yep.
Let's see. Extra Point. New episode there. Recapped a wild card weekend and the divisional playoff preview. NBA team podcast. Looked at the other guys. Kind of... forgotten guys who fell between NBA championship and all-star lore, kind of those forgotten superstars and, well, interesting superstars, forgotten players.
Right.
That you may have remembered from your youth. Wrestle Kingdom 9 reaction show with Will, Pete, Johnny Dillon, and Johnny P, breaking down the huge New Japan pro wrestling show from the weekend. Mm-hmm. This week in 90s wrestling, January 4th through 10th. This is a new installment from Charles Williams of PWO. Each and every Sunday this will be up. looking back at the 90s. So what we'll be doing is he'll look at the dates for the week coming ahead, go back through the 90s, call any big important events from that week in wrestling history. It could be Japan, could be, you know, Mexico, North America, wherever it is. You'll be able to see Canada, U.S. You'll be able to get all the info there from Charles as he breaks down. He'll give write-ups for matches, for promos. He'll include links to matches. He'll have videos of the promo. A lot of cool stuff from a guy that really knows his wrestling. And you'll learn something each and every week in this article. I promise you that. So diehard wrestling fans must check this one out. It is an absolute must-read. PlaceToBeNation.com. So be sure to check us out each and every day. Come back for all your pop culture needs, wrestling, sports, comics, movies, entertainment, everything else in the world of pop culture and sports.
Yes, exactly. And now we will go back to Orlando for Armageddon. The end is here. We're on like, what, our sixth year of using that? Fair enough, maybe not that much. Fifth year of using that song? Do they kind of use it every show? I know 2000 they played the hell out of Sweet Home Alabama because it was because the pay-per-view was in
right
Birmingham.
I think they've used it at least like once.
Yeah. They use it more. They use it a couple more times throughout the rest of the decade. Obviously, they didn't use it in 01 because they didn't use Armageddon, and they definitely used it in 02. So.
Right.
Okay. The end is here. All right. Next up, we have our next title match.
Mm-hmm.
The Women's Championship on the line. Your champion, Molly Holly, who's had it for a few months now, taking on somebody who's been dusted the mothballs off her, and that is Ivory. She hasn't been around much.
No.
I believe this might be the end for Mark Henry's ex.
The end is near.
Scarf-throwing girlfriend. Tell us about Ivory.
It is her final pay-per-view appearance. She spent most of the next year as a trainer on Tough Enough and in OVW, as a broadcaster at Doty Live Events, and as a co-host with Todd Grisham on the show Doty Experience, which recapped Raw and SmackDown. July 05, her contract expired and was not renewed. Since her release, she worked for several indie promotions under her own name, and her all-time record is 4-6.
And in 2005, JR, I saw her at Walmart.
There you go.
Here on Route 7 up here in the Norwalk Wilton line, I saw her walking around Walmart. It's pretty funny.
So Molly, okay. I think Molly's been a good champ.
Yes.
But very bland reign. Not much memorable about it. Ivory pulled out of mothballs to fill a slot. Division mm-hmm. needed some freshening. Usual stupid commentary from Molly matches with King and all the sexual frustration nonsense. Crowd is flat as they tussle around. Molly's working hard, but the match just has no heat behind it, and the announcers just pretty much straight up ignore it. Molly gets a roll up, and again, just nothing here.
No, and again, it's just, as I mentioned a few matches ago, that she was just there to fill a hole because Trish and Lita were doing something else. So they just, you know, they need to give Molly a... That's the one thing about these brands. The occasional drawback of the brand-specific shows is you need to fill a hole somewhere. You can't, you know, do like a three-match pay-per-view. So if you have the titles, you got to defend them. So, you know, they needed to give Molly something to do. So they did. And they put Ivory in there. Again, perfectly serviceable worker. She's good in the ring. And there you go. So matches, you know, nothing crazy. A little under 4.5 minutes. Nothing earth-shattering. Just something to give the crowd a spell between that long turmoil match and our main event. And there you go. Really not much more to say. Molly Holly retains the women's championship. And it has been kind of bland. But do you think, JR, it's because they really haven't focused on it? I don't remember it being a major cog of Raw because, of course, on camera, Bischoff has had his hands all over everything, and he really hasn't done much with the women. So
right.
I think maybe that's why.
And you had the Trish and Lita were doing the other thing. And
that's what I'm saying. Right, yeah, that too.
They've been the main focus. So, yeah, I would say that's probably the truth. And really, just outside of them and Molly and Victoria, who they kind of save, there's no one else. There's no depth. So that's why they're dragging. I'm surprised Jackie didn't get this fucking title match here.
I know, really, yeah.
She always dragged out Luna, one of the...
Tori or something.
Yeah,
Luna.
Whenever they're desperate. I think it's a lack of depth, and they're trying to pull off having multiple, you know, diva women things going on, and they just don't have the depth to support it. So they really needed an influx of some fresh talent. What the hell's Gail Kim been, too? She debuted midway through the year and has done nothing since.
Yeah, she'd have been perfect in this. Now, she was still a heel, right? She hadn't really turned face or anything, so...
I don't know.
No, they could have done it. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, they could have done something there. But if this was just a spell, I mean, Ivory was
it's fine for what it is. But you could have just not had a match on this card. It'd been fine.
Yeah. Well, I said that you need to fill this up. I mean, if you have titles, you're brand specific, you might as well stick them on there. I mean, you got to fill the card. You got to make these shows worthwhile, even in December. But all right, We have now reached our main event.
Time to play the game!
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Hey, Griscolo, let's jump in the Corvette. Let's get the fuck out of here. It's too cold. Let's head down south.
Orlando, Disney World.
Let's get to the beach. Get my fucking thong on.
Well, you don't have to wear the bike shorts. You don't have to wear the bike shorts anymore.
That's right. You massaged it right out of my groins, Griscolo. Feeling a lot better. Hope you like.
What happened
Christmas
to all the purple
present?
And what happened to the purple and red tights? Why the black ones?
I hope you liked your Christmas present, Griscolo.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of antibiotics. We'll take care of it, but I hope you enjoyed it.
Okay. All right, so...
By the way, I'm glad we got a couple Goldberg main events without Triple H involved. Jesus Christ. I mean, what the fuck kind of title reigns this poor guy got?
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. How do we get here, JR? Pretty much the same as every other time. All right. How do we get to... A triple threat. It is not a Goldberg Triple H 3 for the World Heavyweight Championship. A new wrinkle in the mix. Tell us about it.
On 11/17, Eric Bischoff offered Triple H a rematch. A rematch with Goldberg because he definitely deserved one. I mean, there's no doubt about it, right? I mean, anyone deserves a rematch after losing three straight fucking times to a guy, basically.
Exactly. Duh.
I mean, yeah, he was definitely due. He had really bided his time, had worked his way back up the ladder, and there he is.
He's in the mid-card.
And instead, Hunter requested a 3-on-1 match, and Eric obliged. Evolution won, went to Batista, hit a powerbomb, Triple H hit the pedigree. They assaulted Goldberg until...
Yes!
Came out to stop them. Kane turned to Goldberg and beat him down as well, and it was announced that Goldberg and Hunter would face off the next week. A week later, Goldberg and Triple H wrestled a short match that ended in DQ when Randy Orton got involved. Kane then came out and a big brawl erupted. After the match, Triple H bullied Bischoff into a rematch, and Eric announced that Goldberg would defend against Kane and Triple H at the pay-per-view. On 12/8, Goldberg and Kane battled in a lumberjack match that ended in DQ when Orton, again, interfered. And I get that they're in a tight spot. We'll talk about that at the end of the match. I'll just preface with that, but the crowd really wanted Kane and Goldberg. Mm-hmm. They got a big pop for a stare down on Raw. Kane was still kind of fresh in this new run, had finally get rid of Shane McMahon, beaten RVD, and was really positioned as a monster. And fans really seemed to be excited for him and Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have used just one main event without Triple H involved. Mm-hmm. I thought it was good to see Kane here. Triple H looked much better, no more fat pants, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Crowd still into Goldberg. Kane and Hunter worked together early, trying to eliminate Goldberg. Crowd's chanting for him through the whole match. He gets a nice leaping shoulder block to wipe out Kane. Goldberg gets some good offense bouncing between both men. The segments with Goldberg and Kane felt like a big match, too.
Mm-hmm.
To these two big hosses going at it. A nice spot with Kane blocking a spear with the big boot. Hunter keeps getting taken out, leaves a fresh match for Goldberg and Kane. Match gets a bit choppy and sloppy, but it feels like a real fight with Goldberg backed in a corner trying to fight these guys off. We get a chair into the mix. Kane gets knocked to the floor. Goldberg tries to pilmanize Hunter as retribution, but Kane makes a save. Hunter uses a chair, but Kane chokeslams... Goldberg off the announce table. Hunter hits an elbow off the barricade onto Goldberg through the table. Hunter talks his way out of fighting Kane and then turns on him and chucks him to the steps. Kane blocks a pedigree on the floor with a backdrop, and Hunter and Kane battle for a few in the ring. They trade counters. Kane chokeslams Hunter on the steel grating outside the ramp. Goldberg comes back with a great spear to Kane. All three men are laid out. Crowd is chanting for Goldberg as him and Kane go toe-to-toe and start tossing bombs. Goldberg fights them both off again until Hunter goes to the eyes. Goldberg gets a spear on both Hunter and Kane. I thought that should have been the finish right there. He crushed them both with spears. Mm-hmm. That's where Evolution shows up. They hit Goldberg. They try to hit Goldberg, but Goldberg hits another spear on Hunter instead. And now it's a real car wreck feel with bodies just everywhere.
Yes.
Kane hits a chokeslam on Goldberg, but Batista pulls him out and Hunter steals the win. And I thought it was stupid to pin Goldberg. It felt just like Nash in WCW, same month, December. Promising rain, cut short, just like in WCW. I mean, if you have to have Goldberg lose a title, why not have Kane? Why even have him in the match if he wasn't there to eat the pin? I don't get it. I don't get why Hunter had to get this stupid. He already pinned Goldberg. He didn't need to get another win back. Made no sense. Mm-hmm. Evolution celebrates at the top of the ramp to cap off their huge night. I thought the match was much better than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Well booked with some big spots and a messy feel, questionable finish. And I know that Hunter needed to get the belt back. I know that they needed to build towards WrestleMania for the big moment they had planned. They should have done Goldberg Kane at Survivor Series. We didn't need Shane Kane again, and we didn't need Hunter there. Hunter could have taken that show off since he was still hurt. You could have had Goldberg Kane at Survivor Series, and then you do this match here with Goldberg facing the two men who
could have put. And you could have put Triple H in the Survivor match,
right? Or do that,
you know,
protect him a bit. There was other places for him. I feel like this Goldberg run has been a real missed opportunity. It could have lasted longer. They should have started it even as far back as June or July if they wanted to. At the very least, at SummerSlam, it would have felt a little bit better if he won at SummerSlam, beat Triple H at Unforgiven, beat Kane at Survivor Series, and then lost here. I thought it would have felt a little bit more meaningful than what it was. Do you agree with that, or did you think it was time and it was fine?
My issue, believe it or not, is not more with... The problem is that Kane's a heel. I think they wanted to see if, because I think you could have done Kane Triple H at the Rumble instead of what we do get at the Rumble, which we really didn't need again. Or you give Goldberg the rematch. Oh, no, you don't want that. Don't need another Kane Triple H match or Goldberg Triple H match at that point. Yeah. I probably would have had Kane Goldberg here and then just have Triple H win the belt on Raw. Who gives a shit? I was fine with that. I know they wanted to have the vision of, you know, Evolution with all the belts on the top of the ramp, which was pretty cool. But, yeah, why not have Kane? I was fine with it. Kane Goldberg. Goldberg wins. And then, you know, Hunter can win the belt, I don't know, like the first Raw of 2004 or something, you know, or the last Raw of the year or whatever. Instead of that, Shawn, you know, we go back to that feud, and we'll talk more about that in our next vault. But that, I think, is a bigger problem. Not necessarily here, but definitely what they do after this show. But I don't think there's any problem with Kane Goldberg here and then have, you know, Triple H win the belt, you know, that last Raw in San Antonio or wherever the hell that Raw is.
Right.
Or the first Raw of 04. Win the belt anytime.
Yeah.
Seriously, anytime.
They could have given Goldberg. It's a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
Here, especially after screwing him for that extra month back in the
fight. Yeah, you could have had King. I had no problem with it. Now, the match, let's talk about it in a bubble. Not the bubble boy, like the great Seinfeld episode that I have to watch. But this match was better than I remember again. And better than it should have been, like you said before.
Mm-hmm.
I thought these three actually worked very well together. I thought they had some pretty good chemistry. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
I thought Kane fit in. This might be one of Kane's best in-ring stretches, maybe of his career. I mean, 02 was pretty good, but
yeah.
When he lost his mask all year, I mean, yeah, the Shane stuff was stupid, but he still looked fine in the matches. But these three had really good chemistry. I kind of like the back and forth with Kane and Triple H, like kind of like, oh, I wasn't going to attack you. What do you mean you weren't going to attack me? Yeah, you know, I thought that was fine. Yeah, this match was definitely better than it had any business being. but having said that, yeah, I would have, if you had to have a plan B, I think Kane and Goldberg should have been solo at this show. Again, it's a throwaway December show, which ended up not being a throwaway, as we've talked about. But it was okay for Kane and Goldberg to go solo here, and Hunter can take the show off or whatever, and
I agree. I mean, even if they wanted to do it here to do the Evolution night, that's fine. If they just would have you know, led into this a bit stronger. That's all.
Yeah. I have issues with something else that happens with Triple H, and we'll talk again. We'll get into that in our next vault. So there you go. Triple H, now I believe it is 8-time world champion. Everybody cares. Triple H is once again world heavyweight champion. No doubt, JR, that overall, blown away at how much more was in this show than it had that I ever thought there was.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know? Pretty tight, the show. It's got some pretty good booking. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's forgettable in spots, but some big stuff happens. You kick off Orton's launch, a big night for Batista, the title change at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the main occurrences. You got the kind of the rarity with Foley being the co-GM in there. Booker Henry was fine. The Lita-Trish match was interesting. And the only real down spot was the turmoil up until the end. And then Molly Ivory. So that was kind of a dead run right there. But it was definitely all Evolution's night. A huge night to set them up. And also the final nail for Goldberg. But I enjoyed the show. You know, nothing I go out stumping for saying it's a must-watch or anything. But it definitely wasn't maybe as bad as reputation may hold. So,
But I would watch it. I would recommend to Place Be Nation. Throw it in. If you're you know, like we do a lot of times, we have the network in front of us. I don't know what to watch. Put it on, watch it for a while, and I think you'll be surprised at how much more meat is in this show than you think there was. And again, just take it from us. The Orton's growing, evolving, haha. But definitely Batista. I think that is what kind of blew me away. I forgot how good that Shawn match is, and how much he shined with a little bit of
help from Mr.
holding back. Oh. Yeah, with a little bit of holding back, because you know, we talked about it. He's still growing. He's kind of behind the curve of everybody else because of the injury he suffered. So there you go, Armageddon 2003. We conclude the year 2003 in wrestling, and
been an interesting one. The first year with WWE is kind of solo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was pleasantly surprised. We have some low moments, but I feel like we've gained more positive vibes than before. And look, you even finally softened about No Mercy. I don't have to hear you bang your head against the wall anymore about
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah, the shows have been a little bit better than I thought overall. I always thought it was a pretty down year. What do you think this falls compared to Bad Blood and Unforgiven, the other two Raw shows? The best of the three?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I think so. We kind of shat all over Unforgiven, and Bad Blood wasn't bad, but I mean, with the Cell, but yeah, of the three solo Raw shows, I think this one is the best. I think best. So let's do this. Best Raw show, Armageddon.
Yeah.
Best SmackDown show, and they only had two.
Vengeance easily.
But Vengeance easily. But admittedly, No Mercy, not as shitty as you thought it was, but not better than Vengeance. And the best combo and the best combo show, obviously, 19.
Oh yeah.
So
it was a decent year overall. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And we're in an interesting spot, promising spot. It's not as much upheaval as it was a year ago, but we have some good talent in the mix. They're well positioned, and there was some hope for a couple guys coming up over the next couple of months, so we'll talk about
it. I concur.
So. All right, that's a wrap at 03. We'll be back tomorrow night, Scott, with our Nitro Live Watch. Jordan, Steve, and Glennie will be in the house. Mm-hmm. And then later this weekend, we'll have our Ken Shamrock interview as well that I'm sure is going to be a lot of fun, too. So keep an eye open for that. So for Scott Griscolo, I'm Justin Rosario. We are out. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Nitro.
I wonder if he'll ever wear the purple tights again.
If you can find them from under your mattress.
No, those are the red ones.
Tell no insane no more.
And it happens all the time, yeah.
What do you see when you turn out the light?
I can't tell you, but it sure feels like madness.
I will have
don't you know I'm gonna make it.